then footsteps. A tall, silver-haired figure appeared by the cat. Cassandra drew breath. Nell. It was like coming face to face with a figment of her imagination. They all stood, observing one another. Nobody spoke. Cassandra had the strange sensation of being witness to a mysterious ritual of adulthood that she couldn't quite understand. She was wondering why they continued to stand, who would make the next move, when Nell broke the silence. "I thought you agreed to call first in future." "Good to see you too, Mum." "I'm in the middle of sorting boxes for auction. I've things everywhere. There's no room to sit." "We'll manage." Leslie flicked her fingers in Cassandra's direction. "Your granddaughter's thirsty. It's bloody hot out here." Cassandra shifted uncomfortably and looked at the ground. There was something odd about her mother's behavior, a nervousness she wasn't accustomed to and couldn't articulate. She heard her grandmother exhale slowly. "All right, then," said Nell. "You'd better come inside." Nell hadn't been exaggerating about the mess. The floor was covered in scrunched newspaper, great crinkly mounds. On the table, an island amidst the sea of newsprint, were countless pieces of china and glass and crystal. Bric-a-brac, Cassandra thought, pleasing herself by remembering the term. "I'll put the kettle on," said Leslie, gliding to the other side of the kitchen. Nell and Cassandra were left alone then, and the older woman trained her eyes on Cassandra in that uncanny way she had. "You've grown taller," she said eventually. "But you're still too thin." It was true. The kids at school were always telling her so. "I was thin like you," said Nell. "You know what my father used to call me?" Cassandra shrugged. "Lucky legs. Lucky they don't snap in half." Nell started pulling teacups off hooks attached to an old-fashioned cabinet. "Tea or coffee?" Cassandra shook her head, scandalized. For though she had turned 10 in May, she was still a little girl and not accustomed to grown-ups offering her grown-up drinks. "I don't have fruit juice or fizzy drinks," warned Nell, "or any of those sorts of things." She found her tongue. "I like milk." Nell blinked at her. "It's in the fridge. I keep plenty for the cats. The bottle will be slippery, so don't drop it on my floor." When the tea was poured, Cassandra's mum told her to scoot. The day was too bright and sunny for a little girl to be cooped up inside. Grandma Nell added that she could play under the house, but she wasn't to disturb anything. And she most certainly was not to enter the downstairs flat. It was one of those desperate Antipodean spells where the days seem strung together with no gaps between. Fans do little else but move the hot air around. Cicadas threaten to deafen. To breathe is to exert, and there is nothing for it but to lie on one's back and wait for January and February to pass, the March storms to come, and then finally the first April gusts. But Cassandra didn't know that. She was a child, and had a child's stamina for difficult climates. She let the screen door slap closed behind her and followed the path into the back garden. Frangipani flowers had dropped and were baking in the sun, black and dry and shrunken. She smudged them with her shoe as she walked, drew some pleasure from watching the smears scar the blonde concrete. She sat on the little iron garden seat in the clearing at the top and looked down at the strange garden of her mysterious grandmother, the patched-up house beyond. She wondered what her mother and grandmother were speaking of. Why had they come to visit today? But no matter how she twisted the questions in her mind, she could divine no answers. After a time, the distraction of the garden proved too great. Her questions dropped away, and she began to harvest pregnant, busy Lizzie pods while a black cat watched from a distance, pretending disinterest. When she had a nice collection, Cassandra climbed up onto the lowest bough of the mango tree in the back corner of the yard, pods cupped gently in her hand, and began to pop them, one by one, enjoying the cold, gooey seeds that sprayed across her fingers, the pussycat surprise when a pod shell dropped between her paws, her zeal as she mistook it for a grasshopper. When they were all discharged, Cassandra brushed her hands on her shorts and let her gaze wander. On the other side of the wire fence was a huge, white, rectangular building. It was the Paddington Theatre, Cassandra knew, though it was closed now. Somewhere nearby, her grandmother had a second-hand shop. Cassandra had been there once before on another of Leslie's impromptu visits to Brisbane. She'd been left with Nell while her mother went off to meet someone or other. Nell had let her polish a silver tea set. Cassandra had enjoyed that, the smell of the silvo, watching as the cloth turned black and the teapot shiny. Nell even explained some of the markings. Lion for Stirling, leopard's head for London, a letter for the year it was made. It was like a secret code. Cassandra had hunted at home later that week, hoping to find silver that she could polish and decode for Leslie. But she hadn't found any. She had forgotten until now how much she'd enjoyed the task. As the day wore on and the mango leaves began to sag with heat and the magpies' songs got stuck in their throats, Cassandra made her way back down the garden path. Mum and Nell were still in the kitchen. She could see their shadowy silhouettes through the gauze of the screen, so she continued around the side. There was a huge timber sliding door on runners, and when she pulled the handle, it opened to reveal the cool, dim area beneath the house. The dark formed such a contrast to the bright outdoors that it was like crossing the threshold into another world. Cassandra felt a jolt of excitement as she went inside and walked around the room's rim. It was a large space, but Nell had done her best to fill it. Boxes of varying shapes and sizes were stacked from floor to ceiling around three sides, and along the fourth leaned odd windows and doors, some with broken glass panes. The only space left uncovered was a doorway, halfway along the furthest wall, which led into the room Nell called the flat. Peering inside, Cassandra could see it was about the size of a bedroom. Makeshift shelves, heavy with old books, spanned two walls, and there was a fold-out bed in the corner, a red, white, and blue patchwork quilt draped across it. A small window let in the room's only light, but someone had nailed timber palings across it in places. To keep burglars out, Cassandra supposed. Though what they would want with such a room, she couldn't imagine. She had a strong urge to lie on the bed, to feel the cool of the quilt beneath her warm skin. But Nell had been clear. She could play downstairs, but she wasn't allowed inside the flat. And Cassandra had a habit of obedience. Rather than enter the flat and collapse onto the bed, she turned away. Went back to the spot where some child, long ago, had painted hopscotch squares on the cement floor. She nosed about the edges of the room for a suitable stone, discarded a few before settling on one that was even in shape, with no jagged angles to send it off course. Cassandra rolled it, a perfect landing in the middle of the first square, and began to hop. She was up to number 7 when her grandmother's voice, sharp as broken glass, cut through the floor from upstairs. "What kind of a mother are you?" "No worse than you were." Cassandra remained still, balancing on one leg in the middle of a square as she listened. There was silence, or at least there was silence as far as Cassandra could tell. More likely they had just lowered their voices again, remembered that the neighbours were only a few metres away on either side. Len was always reminding Leslie when they argued that it wouldn't do to have strangers knowing their business. They didn't seem to mind that Cassandra heard every word. She began to wobble, lost her balance, and lowered her foot. It was only for a split second, then she had it raised again. Even Tracy Waters, who had a reputation amongst the grade 5 girls for being the strictest of hopscotch judges, would have allowed it, would have let her continue the round, but Cassandra had lost her enthusiasm for playing. Her mother's tone of voice had left her unsettled. Her tummy had started to ache. She tossed her stone aside and stepped away from the squares. It was too hot to go back outside. What she really felt like doing was reading, escaping into the enchanted wood, up the faraway tree, or with the famous five into Smuggler's Top. She could picture her book lying on her bed where she'd left it that morning, right near the pillow. Stupid of her not to bring it, she heard Len's voice as she always did when she'd done something dumb. She thought then of Nell's shelves, the old books lining the flat. Surely Nell wouldn't mind if she chose one and sat down to read. She'd be careful to do no harm, to leave things just as she'd found them. The smell of dust and thyme was thick inside. Cassandra let her gaze run along the rows of book spines, red and green and yellow, and waited for a title to arrest her. A tabby cat was stretched across the third shelf, balanced in front of the books in a strip of sunlight. Cassandra hadn't noticed it before and wondered where it had come from, how it had entered the flat without her seeing. The cat, seeming to sense that she was under scrutiny, pushed up on her front legs and fixed Cassandra with a look of majesty. Then she leapt in a single fluid motion to the floor and disappeared beneath the bed. Cassandra watched her go, wondering what it would be like to move so effortlessly, to vanish so completely. She blinked. Perhaps not so completely after all. Where the cat had brushed under the quilt, something was now exposed. It was small and white. Rectangular. Cassandra knelt on the floor and lifted the quilt edge. Peered beneath. It was a tiny suitcase. An old suitcase. Its lid sat askew, and Cassandra could see some of the way inside. Papers. White fabric. A blue ribbon. The certainty came over her suddenly, the feeling that she must know exactly what it held, even if it meant breaking Nell's rules further. Heart flickering, she slid the suitcase out and leaned the lid against the bed, began to look over the things inside. A silver hairbrush, old and surely precious, with a little leopard's head for London stamped near the bristles. A white dress, small and pretty, the sort of old-fashioned dress Cassandra had never seen, let alone owned. The girls at school would laugh if she wore such a thing. A bundle of papers tied together with a pale blue ribbon. Cassandra let the bow slip loose between her fingertips and brushed the ends aside to see what lay beneath. A picture. A black and white sketch. The most beautiful woman Cassandra had ever seen, standing beneath a garden arch. Not an arch, a leafy doorway, the entrance to a tunnel of trees. A maze, she thought suddenly. The strange word came into her mind, fully formed. Scores of little black lines combined like magic to form the picture, and Cassandra wondered what it would feel like to create such a thing. The image was oddly familiar, and at first she couldn't think how that could be. Then she realized. The woman looked like someone from a children's book. Like an illustration from an olden days fairy tale, the maiden who turns into a princess when the handsome prince sees beyond her ratty clothing. She set the sketch on the ground beside her and turned her attention to the rest of the bundle. There were some envelopes with letters inside, and a notebook full of lined pages that someone had covered with long, curly handwriting. It may have been written in a different language for all that Cassandra knew. She certainly couldn't read it. Brochures and torn-out pages of magazines had been tucked in the back with an old photograph of a man and a woman and a little girl with long plaits. Cassandra recognized none of them. Beneath the notebook, she found the Book of Fairy Tales. The cover was green cardboard, the writing gold. Magical Tales for Girls and Boys. By Eliza Makepeace. Cassandra repeated the author's name, enjoying the mysterious rustle against her lips. She opened it up and inside the front cover was a picture of a fairy sitting in a bird's woven nest, long flowing hair, a wreath of stars around her head, and large translucent wings. When she looked more closely, Cassandra realized that the fairy's face was the same as that in the sketch. A line of spidery writing curled around the base of the nest, proclaiming her, "Your storyteller, Miss Makepeace." With a delicious shiver, she turned to the first fairy tale, sending startled silverfish scrambling in all directions. Time had colored the pages yellow, worked and worried at the edges. The paper felt powdery, and when she rubbed a dog-eared corner, it seemed to disintegrate a little, fall to dust. Cassandra couldn't help herself. She curled up on her side in the center of the camp bed. It was the perfect place for reading, cool and quiet and secret. Cassandra always hid when she read, though she never quite knew why. It was as if she couldn't shake the guilty suspicion that she was being lazy, that surrendering herself so completely to something so enjoyable must surely be wrong. But surrender she did. Let herself drop through the rabbit hole and into a tale of magic and mystery, about a princess who lived with a blind crone in a cottage on the edge of a dark wood. A brave princess, far braver than Cassandra would ever be. She was two pages from the end when footsteps on the floorboards above called back her attention. They were coming. She sat up quickly and swung her legs over the side of the bed, feet onto the floor. She wanted desperately to finish, to find out what would happen to the princess. But there was nothing for it. She straightened the papers, tossed everything back into the suitcase, and slid it under the bed, removed all evidence of her disobedience. She slipped from the flat, picked up a stone, and headed for the hopscotch squares again. By the time her mum and Nell appeared at the sliding door, Cassandra could make a pretty convincing case that she had been playing hopscotch all afternoon. "Come here, kiddo," said Leslie. Cassandra dusted off her shorts and went to her mother's side, wondered as Leslie wrapped an arm around her shoulders. "Having fun?" "Yes," said Cassandra cautiously. Had she been found out? But her mother wasn't cross. Quite the opposite, she seemed almost triumphant. She looked at Nell. "Told you, didn't I? Takes care of herself, this one." Nell didn't answer, and Cassandra's mum continued. "You're going to stop here with Grandma Nell for a bit, Cassie. Have an adventure." This was a surprise. Her mum must have more business in Brisbane. "Will I have lunch here?" "Every day, I reckon. Until I get back to collect you." Cassandra was aware suddenly of the sharp edges of the stone she was holding, the way the corners pushed into her fingertips. She looked from her mother to her grandmother. Was it a game? Was her mother making a joke? She waited to see whether Leslie would burst out laughing. She didn't. Merely gazed at Cassandra, blue eyes wide. Cassandra could think of nothing to say. "I didn't bring my pajamas," was what she managed in the end. Her mother smiled then, quickly, broadly, with relief, and Cassandra glimpsed somehow that the point of refusal had been passed. "Don't worry about that, you duffer. I've packed you a bag in the car. You didn't think I'd drop you off without a bag, did you?" Through all this, Nell was silent, stiff, watching Leslie with what Cassandra recognized as disapproval. She supposed her grandmother didn't want her to stay. Little girls had a habit of getting in the way. Len was always saying so. Leslie skipped to the car and leaned through the open window at the back to pull out an overnight bag. Cassandra wondered when she'd packed it, why she hadn't let Cassandra pack it herself. "Here you are, kiddo," said Leslie, tossing the bag to Cassandra. "There's a surprise in there for you. A new dress. Len helped me choose it." She straightened and said to Nell, Just a week or two, I promise. Just while Len and me get ourselves sorted. Leslie ruffled Cassandra's hair. Your grandma Nell's looking forward to having you stay. It'll be a real proper summer holiday in the big smoke. Something to tell the other kids when school goes back. Cassandra's grandmother smiled then, only it wasn't a happy smile. Cassandra thought she knew how it felt to smile like that. She often did so herself when her mother promised her something she really wanted, but knew might not come off. Leslie brushed a kiss on her cheek, gave her hand a squeeze, and then, somehow, she was gone. Before Cassandra could give her a hug, could tell her to drive safely, could ask her when exactly she'd be back. Later, Nell made dinner. Fat pork sausages, mashed potato, and mushy peas from a can, and they ate in the narrow room by the kitchen. Nell's house didn't have fly screens on the windows like Len's unit on Burley Beach. Instead, Nell kept a plastic swat on the window ledge beside her. When flies or mozzies threatened, she was a quick draw. So swift, so practiced were these attacks, that the cat, asleep on Nell's lap, barely flinched. The stumpy pedestal fan on top of the fridge beat thick, moist air back and forth while they ate. Cassandra answered her grandmother's occasional questions as politely as she could, and eventually the ordeal of dinner ended. Cassandra helped to dry the dishes, then Nell took her to the bathroom and started running lukewarm water into the tub. "Only thing worse than a cold bath in winter," Nell said matter-of-factly, "is a hot bath in summer." She pulled a brown towel from the cupboard and balanced it on the toilet cistern. "You can shut the water off when it reaches this line." She pointed out a crack in the green porcelain, then stood, straightening her dress. "You'll be all right then?" Cassandra nodded and smiled. She hoped she'd answered correctly. Adults could be tricky sometimes. For the most part, she knew, they didn't like it when children made their feelings known. Not their bad feelings, anyway. Len was often reminding Cassandra that good children should smile and learn to keep their black thoughts to themselves. Nell was different, though. Cassandra wasn't sure how she knew it, but she sensed Nell's rules were different. All the same, it was best to play things safe. That was why she hadn't mentioned the toothbrush, or lack of toothbrush. Leslie was always forgetting such things when they spent time away from home, but Cassandra knew a week or two without wouldn't kill her. She looped her hair up into a bun and tied it on top of her head with an elastic band. At home, she wore her mother's shower cap, but she wasn't sure if Nell had one and didn't want to ask. She climbed into the bath and sat in the tepid water, gathered her knees up close and shut her eyes. Listened to the water lapping the sides of the tub, the buzz of the light bulb, a mosquito somewhere above. She stayed like that for some time, climbing out only reluctantly when she realized that if she put it off any longer, Nell might come looking for her. She dried herself, hung the towel carefully over the shower rail, lining up the edges, then got into her pajamas. She found Nell in the sunroom, making up the day bed with sheets and a blanket. "It's not usually for sleeping on," said Nell, patting a pillow into place. "The mattress isn't much to speak of and the springs are a bit hard, but you're only a waif of a girl. You'll be comfy enough." Cassandra nodded gravely. "It won't be for long. Just a week or two. Just while Mum and Len get things sorted." Nell smiled grimly. She looked about the room, then back to Cassandra. "Anything else you need? A glass of water? A lamp?" Cassandra half wondered whether Nell had a spare toothbrush, but couldn't formulate the words required to ask. She shook her head. "In you hop, then," said Nell, lifting a corner of the blanket. Cassandra slid obediently into place, and Nell pulled up the sheets. They were surprisingly soft, pleasantly worn, with an unfamiliar yet clean smell. Nell hesitated.
Well, good night.
Good night. Then the light was off, and Cassandra alone. In the dark, strange noises were amplified. Traffic on a distant ridge, a television in one of the neighboring houses, Nell's footsteps on the floorboards of another room. Outside the window, the wind chimes were clattering, and Cassandra realized that the air had become charged with the smell of eucalypt and road tar. A storm was coming. She curled up tight beneath the covers. Cassandra didn't like storms. They were unpredictable. Hopefully it would blow over before it really got going. She made a little deal with herself. If she could count to 10 before the next car droned over the nearby hill, everything would be okay. The storm would pass quickly, and Mum would come back for her within the week. 1, 2, 3. She didn't cheat, didn't rush. 4, 5. Nothing so far, halfway there. 6, 7. Breathing quickly, still no cars, almost safe. 8. Suddenly she sat bolt upright. There were pockets inside the bag. Her mum hadn't forgotten. She'd just tucked the toothbrush in there for safekeeping. Cassandra slipped out of bed as a violent gust tossed the chimes against the window pane. She crept across the room, bare feet cooled by a draft of wind that sneaked between the floorboards. The sky above the house grumbled ominously, then turned spectacularly to light. It felt dangerous, reminded Cassandra of the storm in the fairy tale she'd read that afternoon, the angry storm that had followed the little princess to the crone's cottage. Cassandra knelt on the floor, rummaging in one pocket after another, willing the toothbrush's familiar shape to meet her fingertips. Big, fat raindrops started falling, loud on the corrugated iron roof. Sporadic at first, then increasing until Cassandra could hear no gaps between. It wouldn't hurt to recheck the main part of the bag while she was at it. A toothbrush was only small. Maybe it was tucked so far down she'd missed it. She pushed her hands in deep and pulled out everything from inside. The toothbrush was not there. Cassandra blocked her ears as another clap of thunder shook the house. She picked herself up and folded her arms across her chest, aware vaguely of her own thinness, her inconsequence, as she hurried back to bed and climbed under the sheet. Rain poured over the eaves, ran down the windows in rivulets, spilled from the sagging gutters that had been caught unawares. Beneath the sheet, Cassandra lay very still, hugging her own body. Despite the warm, muggy air, there were goosebumps on her upper arms. She knew she should try to sleep. She'd be tired in the morning if she didn't, and no one liked to spend time with a grump. Try as she might, though, sleep wouldn't come. She counted sheep, sang silent songs about yellow submarines and oranges and lemons and gardens beneath the sea, told herself fairy tales. But the night threatened to stretch on endlessly. As lightning flashed, rain poured, and thunder tore open the sky, Cassandra began to weep. Tears that had waited a long time for escape were finally released under the dark veil of rain. How much time passed before she became aware of the shadowy figure standing in the doorway? 1 minute? 10? Cassandra caught a sob in her throat, held it there, although it burned. A whisper. Nell's voice. I came to check the window was closed. In the dark, Cassandra held her breath, wiped at her eyes with the corner of the sheet. Nell was close now. Cassandra could sense the strange electricity generated when another human stands near without touching. What is it? Cassandra's throat, still frozen, refused to let words pass. Is it the storm? Are you frightened? Cassandra shook her head. Nell sat stiffly on the edge of the daybed, tightened her dressing gown around her middle. Another flash of lightning and Cassandra saw her grandmother's face, recognized her mother's eyes with their slightly downturned corners. The sob was finally dislodged.
"My toothbrush," she said, through tears. "I don't have my toothbrush."
Nell looked at her a moment, startled, then gathered Cassandra in her arms. The little girl flinched at first, surprised by the suddenness, the unexpectedness of the gesture. But then she felt herself surrender. She collapsed forward, head resting against Nell's soft, lavender-scented body, shoulders shaking as she wept warm tears into Nell's nightie. "There now," Nell whispered, hand smoothing Cassandra's hair. "Don't you worry. We'll find you another one." She turned her head to look at the rain sluicing against the window and rested her cheek on the top of Cassandra's head. "You're a survivor. You hear? You're going to be all right. Everything's going to be all right." And although Cassandra couldn't believe that things would ever be all right, she was comforted a little by Nell's words. Something in her grandmother's voice suggested that Nell understood, that she knew just how frightening it was to spend a stormy night alone in an unfamiliar place. Chapter 6. Maryborough, 1913. Though he was late home from port, the broth was still warm. That was Lil, bless her. She wasn't the sort to serve up cold soup to her fellow. Hugh spooned the last of it into his mouth and leaned back against his chair, gave his neck a rub. Outside, distant thunder rolled along the river and into town. An invisible draft set the lamplight to flickering, coaxed the room's shadows from hiding. He let his tired gaze follow them across the table, around the base of the walls, along the front door, dancing dark on the skin of the shiny white suitcase. Lost suitcases he'd had, plenty of times. But a little girl? How the hell did someone's child wind up sitting on his wharf, alone as you please? She was a nice little thing, too, as far as he could tell. Pretty to look at. Strawberry hair like spun gold, and real deep blue eyes. A way of looking at you that told you she was listening, that she understood all you were saying and all you weren't. The door to the sleepout opened and Lil's soft, familiar shape materialized. She pulled the door gently behind her and started down the hall, brushed a bothersome curl behind her ear, the same unruly curl that had been jumping out of place all the time he'd known her. "She's asleep now," Lil said as she reached the kitchen. Frightened of the thunder, but she couldn't fight it for long. Poor little lamb was as tired as the day. Hugh took his bowl to the bench and dunked it in tepid water. "Little wonder. I'm tired myself."
"You look it. Leave the washing up to me."
"I'm all right, little love. You go in. I won't be long."
But Lil didn't leave. He could sense her behind him, could tell, the way a man learns to, that she'd something more to say. Her next word sat pregnant between them, and Hugh felt his neck tense, felt the tide of previous conversations draw back, suspend a moment, preparing to crash once more upon them. Lil's voice, when it came, was low. "You needn't pussyfoot around me, Hughie." He sighed.
"I know that."
"I'll come through. Have before."
"Course you will.
Last thing I need is for you to treat me like an invalid."
"I don't mean to, Lil."
He turned to face her. saw that she was standing on the far side of the table, hands resting on the back of a chair. The stance, he knew, was supposed to convince him of her stability, to say, "All is as it was." But Hugh knew her too well for that. He knew that she was hurting. Knew also that there was nothing he could bloody well do to set things right. As Dr. Huntley was so fond of telling them, some things just weren't meant to be. It didn't make it any easier, though. Not on Lil, and not on him. She was by his side then, bumping him gently with her hip. He could smell the sweet, sad milkiness of her skin. "Go on, get yourself to bed," she said. "I'll be in soon." The carefully rendered cheerfulness made his blood chill, but he did as she said. She was true to her word, wasn't far behind him, and he watched as she cleaned the day from her skin, pulled her nightdress over her head. Though her back was turned, he could see how gently she eased the clothing over her breasts, her stomach that was still swollen. She glanced up then and caught him looking. Defensiveness chased vulnerability from her face. "What?" "Nothing." He concentrated on his hands, the calluses and rope burns earned by his years on the wharves. "I was just wondering about the little one out there," he said. "Wondering who she is. Didn't give up her name, I suppose." "Says she doesn't know. Doesn't matter how many times I ask, she just looks back at me, serious as can be, and says she can't remember." "You don't think she's fooling, do you? Some of them stowaways do a darn good line in fooling." "Hughie," scolded Lil, "she's no stowaway. She's little more than a baby." "Easy, Lil, love, I was just asking." He shook his head. "Only it's hard to believe she could have clean forgot like that." "I've heard of it before. Amnesia, it's called. Ruth Hapney's father got it, after his fall down the shaft. That's what causes it. Falls and the like." "You think she might have had a fall?" "Couldn't see any bruises on her, but it's possible, ain't it?" "Ah, well," said Hugh, as a flash of lightning lit the room's corners. "I'll look into it tomorrow." He shifted position, lay on his back and stared at the ceiling. "She must belong somewhere," he said quietly. "Yes." Lil extinguished the lamp, casting them into darkness. "Someone must be missing her like the dickens." She rolled over as she did each night, turning her back on Hugh and shutting him out of her grief. Her voice was muffled by the sheet. "I tell you, they don't deserve her, though. Bloody careless. What kind of person could lose a child?" Lil watched out the back window where the two little girls were running back and forth below the clothesline, laughing as the cool, damp sheets brushed their faces. They were singing again, another of Nell's songs. That was one thing that hadn't slipped her memory, the songs. She knew such a lot of them. Nell, that's what they were calling her now, after Lil's mum, Eleanor. Well, they had to call her something, didn't they? The funny little thing still couldn't tell them her name. Whenever Lil quizzed her, she widened those big blue eyes and said she didn't remember. After the first few weeks, Lil stopped asking. Truth be told, she was just as happy not to know. Didn't want to imagine Nell with any name other than the one they'd given her. Nell. It suited her so well, no one could say it didn't. Almost as if she'd been born to it. They'd done their best to find out who she was, where she belonged. That's all anyone could ask of them. And although initially she'd told herself that they were just minding Nell for a time, keeping her safe until her people came for her, with every day that passed, Lil became more certain that there were no such people. They'd fallen into an easy routine, the three of them. Breakfast together of a morning, then Hughie would leave for work, and she and Nell would get started on the house. Lil found she liked having a second shadow, enjoyed showing Nell things, explaining how they worked and why. Nell was a big one for asking why. Why did the sun hide at night? Why didn't the fire flames leap out of the grate? Why didn't the river get bored and run the other way? And Lil loved supplying answers, watching as understanding dawned on Nell's little face. For the first time in her life, Lil felt useful, needed, whole. Things were better with Huey, too. The sheet of tension that the past few years had strung between them was beginning to slip away. They'd stopped being so damned polite, tripping over their carefully chosen words like two strangers drafted into close quarters. They'd even started to laugh again sometimes. Easy laughter that came unforced like it had before. As for Nell, she took to life with Huey and Lil like a duck to the Mary River. It didn't take long for the neighborhood kids to discover there was someone new in their midst, and Nell perked up something tremendous at the prospect of other children to play with. Young Beth Reeves was over the fence at some point every day now. Lil loved the sound of the two girls running about together. She'd been waiting so long, had so looked forward to a time when little voices might squeal and laugh in her own backyard. And Nell was a most imaginative child. Lil often heard her describing long and involved games of make-believe. The flat, open yard became a magical forest in Nell's imagination, with brambles and mazes, even a cottage on the edge of a cliff. Lil recognized the places Nell described from the book of children's fairy tales they'd found in the white suitcase. Lil and Huey had been taking it in turns to read the stories to Nell of a night. Lil had thought them too frightening at first, but Huey had convinced her otherwise. Nell, for her part, didn't seem bothered a whit. From where she stood, watching at the kitchen window, Lil could tell that's what they were playing today. Beth was listening, wide-eyed, as Nell led her through an imaginary maze, flitting about in her white dress, sun rays turning her long red plaits to gold. Nell would miss Beth when they moved to Brisbane, but she'd be sure to make new friends. Children did. And the move was important. There was only so long Lil and Huey could tell people that Nell was a niece from up north. Sooner or later, the neighbours were going to start wondering why she hadn't gone home, how much longer she'd be staying. No, it was clear to Lil. The three of them needed to make a fresh start somewhere they weren't already known. A big city, where people wouldn't ask questions. Chapter 7. Brisbane, 2005. It was a morning in early spring, and Nell had been dead just over a week. A brisk wind wove through the bushes, twirling the leaves so that their pale undersides fluttered towards the sun. Like children thrust suddenly into the spotlight, flitting between nerves and self-importance. Cassandra's mug of tea had long grown cold. She'd set it on the cement ledge after her last sip and forgotten it was there. A brigade of busy ants whose way had been thwarted was now forced to take evasive action, up the mug's edge and through the handle to the other side. Cassandra didn't notice them, though. Sitting on a rickety chair in the backyard beside the old laundry, her attention was on the rear wall of the house. It needed a coat of paint. Hard to believe 5 years had passed already. The experts recommended that a weatherboard house should be repainted every 7, but Nell hadn't held with such convention. In all the time Cassandra had lived with her grandmother, the house had never received a full coat. Nell was fond of saying that she wasn't in the business of spending good money to give the neighbours a fresh view. The back wall, however, was a different matter. As Nell said, it was the only one they ever spent any time looking at. So while the sides and front peeled beneath the fierce Queensland sun, the back was a thing of beauty. Every 5 years the paint charts would come out, and a great deal of time and energy would be spent debating the merits of a new colour. In the years Cassandra had been around, it had been turquoise, lilac, vermilion, teal. Once it had even hosted a mural of sorts, unsanctioned though it might have been. Cassandra had been 19, and life was sweet. She was in the middle of her second year at the College of Arts. Her bedroom had morphed into a studio so that she had to climb across her drawing board to reach her bed each night, and she was dreaming of a move to Melbourne to study art history. Nell was not so keen on the plan. "You can study art history at Queensland Uni," she said whenever the subject was raised. "No need to drag yourself down south." "I can't stay living at home forever, Nell." "Who said anything about forever? Just wait a little while. Find your feet here first." Cassandra pointed to her dock-clad feet. "Found 'em." Nell didn't smile. "Melbourne's an expensive city to live in, and I can't afford to pay your rent down there." "I'm not picking up glasses at the Paddo Tab for fun, you know." "Pah, with what they pay, you can put off applying to Melbourne for another decade." "You're right." Nell cocked her chin and raised a dubious eyebrow, wondering where such sudden capitulation was leading. "I'll never save enough money myself." Cassandra bit her bottom lip, arresting a hopeful smile. "If only there were someone willing to spot me alone. A loving person who wanted to help me follow my dreams." Nell picked up the box of china she was taking to the antique center. "I'm not going to stand around here and let you paint me into a corner, my girl." Cassandra sensed a hopeful fissure in the once solid refusal. "We'll talk about it later?" Nell rolled her eyes skyward. "I fear we will. And then again and again and again." She huffed a sigh, signaling that the subject was, for now at least, closed. "Have you got everything you need to do the back wall?" "Check. You won't forget to use the new brush on the boards. I don't want to stare at loose bristles for the next 5 years." "Yes, Nell, and just to get things straight, I dip the brush into the paint tin before putting it on the boards, right?" "Cheeky girl." When Nell arrived home from the antique center that afternoon, she rounded the corner of the house and stopped still, appraising the wall in its shiny new coat. Cassandra stepped back and pressed her lips together to stop from laughing. Waited. The vermilion was striking, but it was the black detailing she'd added over in the far corner that her grandmother was staring at. The likeness was uncanny. Nell sitting on her favorite chair, holding aloft a cup of steaming tea. "I seem to have painted you into a corner, Nell. Didn't mean to. I just got carried away." Nell's expression was unreadable. "I'm going to do me next, sitting right beside you. That way, even when I'm in Melbourne, you'll remember that we're still a pair." Nell's lips had trembled a little then. She'd shaken her head and set down the box she'd brought back from the stall, heaved a sigh. "You're a cheeky girl, there's no doubt about that," she'd said. And then she'd smiled, despite herself, and cupped Cassandra's face in her hands. "But you're my cheeky girl, and I wouldn't have you any other way." A noise, and the past was chased away, dispersed into the shadows like smoke by the brighter, louder present. Cassandra blinked and wiped her eyes. Far above her, a plane droned, a white speck in a sea of bright blue. Impossible to imagine there were people inside, talking and laughing and eating, some of them looking down just as she was looking up. Another noise, nearer now, shuffling footsteps.
"Hello there, young Cassandra."
A familiar figure appeared at the side of the house, stood for a moment, catching his breath. Ben had once been tall, but time had a way of moulding people into shapes they themselves no longer recognised, and his was now the body of a garden gnome. His hair was white, his beard wiry, and his ears inexplicably red. Cassandra smiled, genuinely pleased to see him. Nell was not one for friends and had never hidden her distaste for most other humans, their neurotic compulsion for the acquisition of allies. But she and Ben had seen eye to eye. He was a fellow trader at the antique center, a one-time solicitor who turned his hobby into a job when his wife died. His firm suggested gently it might be time to retire, and his purchase of second-hand furniture threatened to squeeze him out of home. When Cassandra was growing up, he'd been a father figure of sorts, offering wisdom she'd appreciated and disdained in equal measure. But since she'd been back living with Nell, he'd become her friend, too. Ben pulled a faded squatter's chair from beside the concrete laundry tub and sat down carefully. His knees had been damaged as a young man in the Second War and gave him grief aplenty, especially when the weather was turning. He winked over the rim of his round glasses. "You've got the right idea. You'd spot this. Nice and sheltered." It was Nell's spot. Her voice sounded strange to her ears, and she wondered vaguely how long it had been since she'd spoken aloud to anyone. Not since dinner at Phyllis's place a week before, she realized.
"That'd be right. Count on her to know just where to sit."
Cassandra smiled. "Would you like a cuppa?"
"Love one."
She went through the back door into the kitchen and set the kettle on the stove. The water was still warm from when she'd boiled it earlier.
"So, how have you been keeping?"
She shrugged. "I've been all right." Came back to sit on the concrete step near his chair. Ben pressed pale lips together, smiled slightly so that his moustache tangled with his beard.
"Has your mum been in touch?"
"She sent a card."
"Well, then.
Said she would have liked to make it down, but she and Len were busy. Caleb and Marie..."
"Of course. Keep you busy, teenagers."
"Not teenagers anymore. Marie just turned 21. Ben whistled.
"Time flies."
The kettle began shrilling. Cassandra went back inside and drowned the tea bag, watched as it bled the water brown. An irony that Leslie had turned out to be such a conscientious mother second time around. So much in life came down to timing. She dribbled in some milk, wondering vaguely whether it was still okay, when she'd purchased it. Before Nell died, surely. The label was stamped 14th of September. Had that date passed? She wasn't sure. It didn't smell sour. She carried the mug out and handed it to Ben. "I'm sorry, the milk..." He took a sip.
"Best tea I've had all day."
He eyed her a moment as she sat down, seemed about to say something but thought better of it. He cleared his throat.
"Cass, I've come on official business, as well as social."
That death should be followed by official business was no surprise, and yet she felt dizzy, caught off guard.
"Nell had me make out her will. You know how she was. Said she didn't like the idea of divulging her personal affairs to a stranger."
Cassandra nodded. That was Nell. Ben pulled an envelope from the pocket inside his blazer. Age had blunted its edges and turned white to cream.
"She made it some time ago."
He squinted at the envelope.
"In 1981, to be exact."
He paused, as if waiting for her to fill the silence. When she didn't, he continued.
"Pretty straightforward, for the most part."
He withdrew the contents but didn't look at them, leaned forward so his forearms rested on his knees. Nell's will dangled from his right hand.
"Your grandmother left you everything, Cass."
Cassandra was not surprised. Touched, perhaps, and suddenly, perversely, lonely, but not surprised. For who else was there? Not Leslie, certainly. Though Cassandra had stopped blaming her mother long ago, Nell had never been able to forgive. To abandon a child, she had once said to someone when she thought Cassandra couldn't hear, was an act so cold, so careless, it refused forgiveness.
There's the house, of course, and some money in her savings account. All of her antiques.
He hesitated, eyed Cassandra as if gauging her preparedness for something yet to come.
And there's one thing more. He glanced at the papers. Last year, after your grandmother was diagnosed, she asked me to come for tea one morning.
Cassandra remembered. Nell had told her when she brought in breakfast that Ben was visiting and that she needed to see him in private. She'd asked Cassandra to catalogue some books for her up at the antique centre, though it had been years since Nell had taken an active role in the stall.
"She gave me something that day," he said. "A sealed envelope. Told me I was to put it with her will and open it only if... when..."
He pressed his lips together.
"Well, you know."
Cassandra shivered lightly as a sudden cool breeze brushed across her arms. Ben waved his hand. The papers fluttered, but he didn't speak.
"What is it?" she said,
a familiar kernel of anxiety heavy in her stomach. "You can tell me, Ben. I'll be okay." Ben looked up, surprised by her tone, confounded her by laughing.
"Oh, no need to look so worried, Cass. It's nothing bad. Quite the opposite, really."
He considered for a moment.
"More a mystery than a calamity."
Cassandra exhaled. His talk of mysteries did little to relieve her nervousness.
"I did as she said. Put the envelope aside and didn't open it till yesterday. Could have knocked me down with a feather when I saw."
He smiled.
"Inside were the deeds to another house."
"Whose house?"
"Nell's house."
"Nell doesn't have another house."
"It would appear she does, or did. And now it's yours."
Cassandra didn't like surprises, their suddenness, their randomness. Where once she'd known how to surrender herself to the unexpected, now the very suggestion heralded a surge of instant fear, her body's learned response to change. She picked up a dry leaf lying by her shoe, folded it in half and in half again, as she thought. Nell hadn't mentioned another house, not in all the time they'd lived together, while Cassandra was growing up and since she'd been back. Why not? Why would she have kept such a thing secret? And what could she have wanted with it?
An investment?
Cassandra had heard people in the coffee shops on Latrobe Terrace talking about rising property prices, investment portfolios, but Nell? Nell had always poked fun at the inner-city yuppies who shelled out small fortunes for the tiny timber workers' cottages of Paddington. Besides, Nell had reached retirement age long ago. If this house were an investment, why hadn't she sold it? Used the money to live on? Dealing antiques had its rewards, but financial remuneration was not chief among them, not these days. Nell and Cassandra made enough to live on, but not much besides. There'd been times when an investment would have come in pretty handy, yet Nell had never breathed a word. This